Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
206 on Supertalk 99.7, WTN, Dan Mandis Show for a Friday. Not a moment too soon. I want to welcome on in David Zanotti, co-host of the Public Square. Heard on over 200 radio stations across America. Don't forget the website, iVoters.com. And as always, the guy who we turn to in times of trouble and despair. David, as always, appreciate you being with us. Want to talk about a very busy week in politics. And one of the big storylines was, how will John Kelly do as the chief of staff for President Trump? We know that Reince Priebus, and we all know about everything that led up to John Kelly coming into office as far as Anthony Scaramucci goes and all of the problems with Sean Spicer and Reince Priebus and all of the other business. But let's now move forward and talk about John Kelly. We're finding out some of the rules that he has for the White House, and one of them is that there's going to be limited access to the president. In other words, apparently under Reince Priebus, it was basically an open-door policy. Under John Kelly, no more. Talk about the difference a chief of staff can make, very specifically in the administration of Donald Trump.
Well, you've got a grown-up in the room. That's the first part. You have a gentleman who is older than most of the people other than the president. Number one. Number two, from those of us that have looked a little bit into Kelly's background and read stories of people who served with him, he has an excellent reputation of being respectful to people, but he's tough. And that's the kind of person that a president needs. He needs someone who's a grown-up, someone who's tough. He needs someone who commands respect when he comes in the room, that's not going to suffer fools lightly and not going to accept unacceptable challenges. In addition to all of that, Donald Trump is, again, learning on the job. He's figuring out that accessibility can be a president's worst enemy, whether it's accessibility to the press, accessibility to others, accessibility even to staff. The president is the man, okay? He has every security clearance. No one's higher security clearance. No one has more power than him. It ought to be rare that you get access. And I think the open door policy, that's fine for a billionaire businessman who's got more money than everybody else in the room, not for president.
Do you see this then changing the way, because some folks have noticed that the president has, even though earlier this week he said that he was going to continue on Twitter, which obviously he has, but his Twitter feed has slowed down. So do you think that, as you said, there's an adult in the room, do you think that the professionalism and the discipline of John Kelly and what he's trying to do with his staff, do you see that rubbing off on President Trump?
Yeah, I do, Dan. And what I'm seeing is the president's beginning to understand that you do not have to go toe-to-toe with the media to beat them. I think he thought that, given the campaign environment, that you have to fight every battle or else they'll take you out. But see, they can't take his job. Now, they can try, and they're doing a darn good job of trying. But in essence, they singularly can't take him out. See, when you're on the campaign trail, the media can't end your campaign. They can't end your presidency. They've got to have help to end your presidency. And that's a whole other level. So now they're one of multiple players instead of the player. And he's figuring that out. It takes time. He's not the only president that's had to figure out the right role with the media. And he's figuring it out. So I think Kelly's in a great position to be of significant help in that regard.
Let me ask you a question, David. One of the things that yesterday this came out, that Robert Mueller is now working with a grand jury as they're working to figure out all of the nuances of this supposed Russian collusion. It's interesting because there's some people who are dismissing this as just a natural order of doing business. Other people who I've noticed are on the left or people who are Trump haters or not necessarily Trump supporters are saying this is a very big deal. My question to you, David Zanotti, as a registered independent, how big of a deal is this, Robert Mueller now utilizing a grand jury?
Well, he's got two grand juries paneled, I understand, in two different districts, and I'm significantly concerned for this reason. This is not 1968. There have been a lot of laws passed since Watergate that are designed to entrap people. I have to tell you that if we had this kind of intensity with two grand juries in Pamela and a special prosecutor during the last 2 years alone of the Obama administration, and they had an unprecedented, unrestricted ability to look back at everything that was going on there, I think you'd see people jumping out of windows, because there's a lot of things that you can't do that you don't know until somebody tells you. You can't make that phone call. You can't have that conversation. You can't transmit that. I mean, let's remember, Hillary Clinton had 13 telephone devices that were destroyed. Why? You find this stuff out after the fact. I mean, look at, again, go back to Hillary Clinton. She didn't know what the C was on the paperwork. Big C, little C, I don't know. She's been around. There's a lot of rules that you can get trapped on. And this is where this is dangerous. I mean, and you ask yourself on the sum total whether Hillary knew it was a big C, little C. Who cares? You know, some of this is designed to simply entrap people in this and the labyrinth that's Washington, D.C. So I think we should be concerned. I think there's good reason to be concerned.
So where do you see – I mean, I don't want to put you in the role of having to be a prognosticator, but – I'm going to put you in the role of being a prognosticator. So where do you see this going? Could this possibly lead to what?
This could lead to Mike Pence being president of the United States.
Wow. Okay. So you think this could lead to either a resignation of President Trump or forcing him out of office? Could this lead to some sort of impeachment proceeding?
And we'll... Yeah, I don't think it would go to impeachment. I think Trump would step aside in the meantime. But it's possible that they've got a drip potentiality where enough people have made enough mistakes that, and none of them, by the way, none of them would matter in regards to the destiny or future of the nation. It's just the drip of tying an administration up in endless prosecution that forces them out. Now, in essence, what I'm talking about is a coup. I'm talking about people unelecting, removing a president from office for the most trivial of challenges. Now, somebody said, well, we're talking about Russian triviality. No. The whole Russian thing, I know you're covering this. We don't even know what we don't know about that yet, and probably there may not be anything to know. It's the drip, drip, drip. So, yeah, there is a real threat here and a substantive threat, and the degree of the threat, in my opinion, is measured by what we saw in the leaks. This last set of leaks in regards to these telephone call transcripts coming out, that is unheard of.
And I guess my question would be, and that'll dovetail into my next question in a moment, but there is no way that President Trump at this point can say, you know, whatever laws I may have broken or whatever I did that may have been inappropriate, he can't, well, I guess let me ask you this question. Let me phrase it a different way. Can he play the I didn't know any better card?
He's only been there for a brief period of time. So the claim that, look, we didn't know that, and this is nonsense, so I'm creating an executive pardon for my office and everyone that was involved because this is nonsense. Here's all the charges. This is stupid. I'm taking it off the table. He could do that. He has the power, constitutional authority. He can do that.
But I think, so if I'm hearing you right, and then we're going to move on, but one of the problems that the president is going to have is, one, okay, the wrongdoing, but the other is that his administration isn't necessarily going to be able to get a whole lot done because of this constant, as you say, drip, drip, drip from all of these different investigations. It's like one thing after another.
Well, and the problem, of course, is that the betrayal inside his own party, which is already manifest. I mean, it's crystal clear that the swamp wasn't a swamp, it's an ocean, and the president doesn't need just a boat, he needs a destroyer. He is fighting now on all fronts, and the intent to paralyze him from his own party is significant. But Dan, here's the twist on the whole thing. The American people pay attention.
Oh, you know what? David, you're fading in and out on us. Are you there?
Dan, I'm sorry. You got me now?
Yeah, I got you now. Go ahead.
All right, we'll stay up right here to make sure. Sorry, I'm in western Pennsylvania right now.
Oh, very good. At least, I know you're not going to see Hillary Clinton there anytime soon.
No, sir. Sorry. No, sir. That's for sure. And I still see Trump signs up, by the way.
Yeah.
The reality is that a president can only take so much. He can only take so much. And that's really what we're talking about. But that being said, ultimately, if we get to the place where everyone finally figures out that this is just ganging up on him for no good purpose, it could boomerang. He could become even more popular and more sentimental at election time.
See, that's what I was going to say, is this could very well As you say, boomerang or backfire on those folks that are opening fire, not literally, but figuratively, on President Trump and his administration, because it might be something that will rally the Republicans. So first of all, okay, so if Trump goes away, then Mike Pence becomes president. And a lot of folks would say that Mike Pence is far more conservative than President Trump. So there is that. But it could also mean a rallying of the Republican base, those folks that were never Trumpers, that didn't feel like he was somebody who was portraying appropriate conservative values. I think Mike Pence does have those conservative values that a lot of the never Trumpers were missing in President Trump. And so now, all of a sudden, if Mike Pence becomes president, if we're kind of war gaming this out, then you've brought on board the never Trumpers and the conservatives, of course, because they like Mike Pence. And you also got people like me as well, and I'm a conservative as well, but I like President Trump and I also like Mike Pence. And so this could be something that is more unifying for the Republicans, no matter your shade of red.
The thing about the American electorate is they have a profound sense of fair play. Now, they'll put up with a lot of bad form, but they will not accept an unfair play, and the other side runs that risk. They really, really run the risk. If they've got real charges, they've got to bring them out, but this is only going to last so long, and then the drama's going to get old, and the momentum can shift.
Do you think that this will... I want to frame this a certain way because I don't want to ask a leading question. Do you think?
Ask any leading question you want. Your counselor, you're on good ground.
All right, very good. So, when the American people and the American electorate, as you say, when they look at Robert Mueller and this grand jury and all of these other things, the leaks and everything else, do you think that when the people look at that, is this something that the people see as something the left is doing to President Trump, or do they see this as Republicans who don't like President Trump are doing some of this leaking, and also, obviously, the left is also doing some of this leaking as well? I mean, who is going to ultimately be blamed or credited if they're able to move President Trump from office?
Right now, there are two people that are growing more like villains every day. Clearly, the progressive leftist media and the Democrat Party, and I'm not sure which of those works for the other one in these days,
but sure,
they're clearly after the president. They would accept a coup at any level, and I mean that. They would take any way to get this man out. They've said it out loud on numerous of occasions. But since John McCain pulled the executioner switch last week on the debate on reforming and repealing and taking any conversation about fixing Obamacare off the table, now the American people are very clear in understanding that there is a wing of the Republican Party that may as well be Democrats.
Yeah.
And they see them now more clearly. And, you know, McCain and company have been very effective working in the shadows. But when they take that kind of spotlight and that kind of profile, it doesn't look very good. And I think they've exposed themselves to the reality of their real agenda. And I think people are paying attention.
So Jeff Flake came out last week or so. He has come out and he's saying all kinds of negative things, not only about President Trump, but also about Republicans who are not standing up to President Trump or calling out President Trump. Is it too early for Republicans to start thinking about running against President Trump in a primary leading into 2020?
Well, actually, I think it's the perfect time for Republicans to start thinking about replacing Jeff Flake in 2018.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And what I'm seeing is the Trump White House organizing at that level,
right,
which is something that has not happened before in modern history, could be an incredible change in the dynamic. And that trip to West Virginia yesterday on the behalf of President Trump was a pretty darn effective trip when you show up in West Virginia, about an hour from where I am right now, and the governor converts parties in front of you and all those witnesses. I got to tell you something. The shaking of what Trump's doing is far from over in this country.
One of the big news stories today is, of course, this.
I have this message for our friends in the intelligence community. The Department of Justice is open for business, and I have this warning for would-be leakers. Don't do it.
So that is Jeff Sessions, of course, Attorney General. And one of the things that I said, David, in the opening is that we have had, on average, a leak a day from the Trump administration or from somebody somewhere against the Trump administration. And so there have been a lot of leaks. And we had DNI, we got Dan Coats up there, we got Jeff Sessions up there, and they said what they said. I know you're familiar with the story. But it just feels like we've had an average of one leak a day for the past, well, ever since Trump went into office. And we're just now having this press conference. It seems to me like it's too little too late. Four people have been charged with leaks. But it just seems like when President Trump says that Jeff Sessions has been weak on leaks, suddenly it all came into focus for me, because it seems like this press conference should have happened, maybe March 1st, middle of February?
Well, yeah, if we were having this conversation a year from now, I think we'd have a lot more air underneath this to make that kind of a distinction. But they've been rather busy. They've had a lot their plate. And so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that one. What I wish Sessions would have done is waited until he had the leaker of these last two phone calls. And I wish that what he would have been announcing is who that person is and the indictment going up against them before a grand jury or whatever. That's a secret piece of information. I said that incorrectly. I wish he could have mentioned that, in fact, they were pursuing an indictment against an unnamed individual because they found them and they're coming after them. I wish he would have had one in his pocket
right before
he issues a threat, because threatening is, to me, it's a very meaningless thing in politics. So I hope Sessions got more cattle under his hat than that.
Yeah, and one of the things that that I think is that, okay, so Jeff Sessions and Dan Coats, they're saying, okay, don't do it, and you're going to suffer consequences. But I just don't know, here we are, again, 6-7 months into the Trump administration, and these leaks have been happening for a long time, and the president himself has been lamenting these leaks. So do you think that Sessions and Coats coming out and saying, don't do it, is enough to stop the leaks? That's question number one. And question number two, as you've mentioned a couple of different times now, the importance of this particular leak that came out in the last 24 hours, I believe, and I covered it yesterday and today, and that is the leaking of the transcripts of these phone calls. Why that particular leak is so important? So go ahead and answer those two questions.
Well, a number of media reports have commented about the elegance of the leak, in that it really doesn't show you anything other than an awkward communication, so that there's technically no danger. But what it does show you is that someone is able to take what has never been leaked before, and that someone in the media is willing to leak something that is clearly classified, clearly not for public purposes, clearly against the law, and that the New York Times or the Washington Post or whoever else may be involved ultimately in this whole game, that the American media, speaking generically now, is willing to publish a criminal action as news. And it relates to the president. What if this had been a conversation regarding international terrorism and lives were at stake? Would they have leaked it? Because it made Donald Trump look bad, would they have let their politics rule over their patriotism?
And, you know, David, we know that obviously the New York Times and the Washington Post, those are the main two culprits of all of these various leaks. And the Trump administration and Jeff Sessions and Dan Coats both said that they were going to look at the policies as far as what can be done about these news organizations leaking this information or publishing this information that has been leaked to them. What can they do? I mean, is there a point in time where obviously you have to balance a freedom of the press with changing policies as far as whether or not you can charge a reporter with a crime, I guess. Is that where they're going?
Well, this goes the whole way back to the colonial era, Dan, and the Aliens and Seditions Act. The Alien and Sedition Act of the first administration that involved John Adams, and then the same kind of a situation we were in with Franklin Delano Roosevelt during World War II. There's always been a concern about the leaking of information. Woodrow Wilson faced the same situation in World War I. What do you do about people who are disseminating classified information by design? Now, we've had plenty of examples in the court rulings where the media, under their First Amendment rights and their rights of the Fifth Amendment to not have to indict themselves, if you will, implicate themselves, they can take the Fifth Amendment and plead immunity and plead that they will not self-discriminate and they won't reveal their sources. And they have the right to the Fifth Amendment on that, but they also have the right to go to jail. Because a judge can say you participated in an action that is that risks the national security of the nation willingly.
Right.
You put the nation at risk. And if you will not reveal the source, then a judge can simply say, fine, you'll stay in jail until you do reveal the source, because you're obligated under the Constitution to not, unless you'd prefer that you be tried for treason. I mean, there's got to be some point at which the media, if they refuse to exercise good wisdom and judgment on their own, that the greater good of constitutional law and the safety of the nation is impacted. That's what presidents have always fought over since the 1700s in regards to espionage. And at this stage in the game, the New York Times and the Washington Post thumb their nose at the Constitution, thumb their nose at everything but the rights they want, and thumb their nose at the safety of everyone else and say, the heck with it, because we can do it and we want to and we don't like this president. We'll do whatever we want. Is that fair?
David,
that's the point.
David, 15 seconds. What's coming up on the public square?
Mottos and monuments, an outstanding discussion about personal liberty and freedom of speech, mottos and monuments. You don't want to miss it this Sunday morning at 6 a.m. here on Supertalk 99.7 WTN.
And David, you have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you next time. We'll return next on WTN. I got to ask a question. Now, Bell, I'm sitting here in the not so vast WTN radio studio. It is pouring outside. There is lightning and thunder. And during the commercial break, our lights went out for a time and all of our equipment went out as well. One, we are still on the air, I'm assuming. But two,
yeah, we are.
If our transmitter or whatever it is gets struck by lightning, does that mean that my brain's going to be fried because I'm wearing headphones and all that kind of stuff? I am safe, right? I'm not going to.
There is a chance, albeit slim. So if at any point I hear you stop talking for more than, say, 20 seconds, I promise to look up and see if you're actually in there alive.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. It is Super Talk 99.7. Yeah, just looking outside. So lots of feedback on today's radio broadcast. This is from Sean. Mandis, I think you're off track. At least for me, if President Trump gets removed from office, I will be more angry at the Republicans. He says, I like Mike Pence, but I didn't vote for him. The Republicans don't want the country club they have formed with all the folks in Washington, D.C. to be disrupted and are showing they plainly don't give a darn about what the people want or what they voted for, is what I would say. Or they would be working with Trump and not doing all the backbiting. So Sean brings up a good point, and that harkens back to the conversation that David Zanotti and I were having. And I asked David what he thought of this whole Robert Mueller grand jury special investigation. And David said, it is very possible that we could be looking at a President Mike Pence. Now, when David Zanotti says that, I pay attention. The Trump administration, and we've been talking about this for now the last two shows, because this story broke when I was on the air yesterday. And one of the things that I've been saying is that hopefully this is something that when the investigation is finally complete, which is going to be a long time from now, they'll have found nothing. But one of the things, one of the many things that David said, which is a great point, is that this constant drip, drip, drip of investigations will have its toll on President Trump and his administration. And so I said, well, you know, and just to reiterate my point in all this is, if it ended up being somebody who had to come in, if President Trump ended up getting impeached or he had to resign, whatever it is, Mike Pence is certainly somebody that would keep a lot of Republicans happy. However, to Sean's point, Donald Trump brought to the fore a lot of people who had been away from politics for a long time. And it is those people who the Republican Party, I feel, would lose if Mike Pence ended up becoming president of the United States. However, you could also make the argument that even if the Republicans lost those people, if President Trump went away, they might regain some of these Republicans who they've lost because of President Trump. So we'll have to see what happens. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we're going to have to find out where this investigation leads and does it impede the president's ability to do his job, which for the record, I think that that is one of the very sad things about what Robert Mueller is doing and about this absolute disaster, in my opinion, that we've seen in the first 7 months of President Trump, not President Trump's administration, but the reaction of Inside the Beltway and the reaction of those people who simply hate with a blind hatred President Trump for everything that he stands for. And I think that there is a part of that is manifesting itself in these investigations. By the way, I love this headline. This just came over thehill.com. Republican donor sues GOP for fraud over Obamacare repeal failure. Do me a favor and take down my computer, Bell, if you could. A Republican donor in Virginia has filed a lawsuit against the National and Virginia Republican parties, accusing them of fraud and racketeering for raising millions of dollars in donations, knowing they would not be able to repeal Obamacare. Think about this. What did we hear for 7.5, 8 years? We heard all about Obamacare. We heard all about how the Republicans were going to repeal and replace Obamacare, right? So according to this guy, and his name is Bob Hegman, the Republicans had absolutely no intention of repealing and replacing or repealing Obamacare, and he wants his damn money back. The Virginian Pilot reports that Hegman, a retired attorney in Virginia Beach, has now filed the lawsuit, and it blasts the Republican Party, saying that it has been engaged in a pattern of racketeering, which involves massive fraud perpetuated on Republican voters and contributors, as well as some independents and Democrats. Boy, I wonder if he's got a point. Think about that. I mean, he harkens back to, remember when John Boehner said that the Republicans have never intended to implement the Trump agenda or fulfill the promises of the Republican platform? That's part of what the lawsuit states. So that's fascinating. I guess it just depends on how much you believe the Republicans in Congress. And I don't know if this guy is really just trying to make more of a point or if he truly wants his money back. The lawsuit's defendants include the RNC and the Republican Party of Virginia, as well as Virginia's two members of the RNC and the chairman of the state Republican Party, John Whitbeck. He wants the GOP to either threaten to withhold money from members of Congress if they don't repeal Obamacare or return contributions to donors. If the candidates don't deliver, he says, it is incumbent on the RNC to go to the candidate and say, you can't do this. Hegman's suit alleges that both the national and state GOP parties raised millions of dollars from 2009 to 2016 by promising to repeal Obamacare, but that Republicans knew all along they would be unable to repeal the law, and he wants his money back. The suit references comments, yes, made by former Speaker of the House John Boehner when he said it was clear that Obamacare is the law of the land following Obama's reelection. This is fascinating. And I don't know if this is the kind of a lawsuit that's going to go anywhere, but it would be interesting. And let's see if there's anything else. No, that's pretty much about it. This just came over, I believe, just came over thehill.com. Kelly's rules for Trump's West Wing: stop bickering, get in early, and make an appointment. I one of my opening lead questions to David Zanotti, great a conversation with David, by the way. I always like talking to him. And one of my opening questions was, how big of a difference can somebody who is a chief of staff make? And he said, well, it can make a huge difference. So this is from the Wall Street Journal. After 1 week, signs of John Kelly's taking the reins include the end of the unchecked flow of paperwork that crosses the Resolute desk in the Oval Office and a new, more formal process meeting with the president. So in other words, it used to be the president, he would just let anybody come in and they could just kick up their feet and they can have a conversation. No more. They call him the General John Kelly. And what they're saying is that he has put a stop to all of that. You want to talk to the president? You have a meeting. And if John Kelly doesn't think that meeting is important because of whatever reason, that meeting's not going to happen. You know what else? He's implementing those rules not only on the rank and file there in the West Wing, but also Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner are also included in the new rules. And President Trump, I guess, is going along with it. See, this is what encourages me about President Trump is the fact that he, as David says, he is learning on the job. The new rules, yes, extend to Trump's family, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, who serve as official advisors in the White House and have their own staffs, now report to John Kelly as well. As does Chief Strategist Steve Bannon. Staffers no longer loiter outside an Oval Office door. What is, I don't know. What is that? Help me out here, guys. Was that on the air? Or was that just in my headphones? I'm sorry, folks. That was, I had a 1 kilohertz tone screaming into my headphones. If that was on the air, I apologize. John Kelly talked with President Donald Trump after being sworn in as a White House chief of staff and said, these are the changes that need to be made. And he's making them. And President Trump is obviously going along with the changes. And I think this is a good thing for the president. It's a good thing for his staff. And ultimately, it's a good thing for his agenda. It's 250 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. The Jacquees Clemens case is closed. I'll have the latest. While the Justice Department charging 4 people with leaking classified information to the press. These stories and more are all coming up at 3 on WTN.
2:54 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Finally, a Friday. Phil Valentine coming up next after the news at 3:06. You may or may not remember a guy that I talked about a couple of days ago. His name is Kevin Allred. And he is a Rutgers professor, or at least he was a Rutgers professor, and he has now been fired. Why did he get fired? Because he wrote in a social media post a week ago that President Trump is a effing joke. Later on in the weekend, Allred shared the notorious photograph of Kathy Griffin holding that beheaded prop of Donald Trump's head with the caption, "Mood." He also personally indicated the president was, quote, a traitor and a terrorist. Well, now he has been fired. Now, this guy is somebody who, and I mentioned this a couple of days ago, this is a guy who, it worries me that you have somebody who is in charge of teaching the minds of our, I want to say kids, but they're not, they're adults, our college students. It worries me that this guy is in charge of their education. Back in November of 2016, while employed at Rutgers, Allred was admitted to Bellevue Psychiatric Hospital to undergo a mental evaluation after he made threats to kill white people, burn the flag, and abuse gun laws, the New York Daily News reported at the time. Now, Rutgers police told them, "I'm a threat based on political statements I've made on campus and on Twitter. This is for exercising my First Amendment rights," he said on Twitter after the police showed up to his Brooklyn home for questioning. But you can't threaten to kill white people. I mean, burning the flag is one thing. I mean, that is sadly his right. But you can't threaten to kill white people, and you can't say all of these other things. You can even say that Trump is a joke if you want. A lot of people have. But you can't make threats to kill anybody. See, once the word kill is involved in any kind of a conversation, of course you're going to draw the attention of the authorities. He says, "They forced me now to undergo a psychiatric evaluation at the hospital," he tweeted. "They brought me by ambulance, though I'm not under arrest technically." So this guy live tweeted the fact that he was undergoing a psychiatric evaluation. Probably not good for the old career, and it certainly was not for him. And so now he has been fired, and I guess he's looking for a job because the headline is ex-Rutgers professor now fired by Montclair for tweeting that he wanted to kill President Trump. So good riddance, in my opinion. And just got a number of different comments on this story from earlier. I will share with you one or two of the comments, and it's a pretty common story these days. Even Republicans don't like Congress anymore. That is the headline, and the numbers behind the headline is that the approval of Americans, specifically people who are on the right, our opinion of Congress and our approval rating is, let's just say, low. 10%. Congress sank to a 10% approval rating in a new Quinnipiac University poll released yesterday, with roughly 5 in 6 Americans saying that they disapprove of the country's legislative body. This compares to an 18% approval rating in March. And so our disapproval rating of Congress continues to plummet. And I think the reason for that is obviously because Congress continues to do things that are infuriating the American people. And the more that they infuriate the American people and the more that they infuriate, frankly, President Trump, the more people are going to look towards 2018 and some for 2020 to make a change. And that conversation will continue for me. The conversation will continue Monday as I fill in for Ralph on Nashville's Morning News. I'm going to start sleeping the second I get off the air today because that is a rough shift. But looking forward to that. Phil Valentine is up next right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.